This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's good to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're going to be in the upper 30s, low 40s today and the rest of the week with some rain and drizzle, maybe some snow tonight.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, we are headed higher. The Dow is up 140 points, or more than 0.5%. NASDAQ gaining 10, S&P up 9. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index higher by 0.75%. Another presidential tweet attack on Amazon earlier threw a wrench into its rally. But Amazon shares have recovered. Now they are lower by just 0.1%. President Trump again claimed that Amazon's U.S. Postal Service deal was at taxpayers' expense. It's against the law for the post office to charge less than it costs to deliver. Fiat Chrysler, GM, and Ford all reported a bigger-than-expected bump in sales last month. Some deep discounts and promotions helped to boost their sales. GM posted a gain of almost 16%, Ford sales up 3.5%, but Fiat Chrysler saw sales surge 14%, and its Jeep sales in particular soared 45%. All three of those car makers are doing quite well today on Wall Street, with Fiat Chrysler the standout with a gain of approaching 9%. Oil futures also up to $63.51 a barrel. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
On today's Noon Business Hour, we will talk about Rocky Wall Street and the trade war and huge ratings for Roseanne. How is that going to affect the industry?
It is Travel Tuesday. We'll help you book some summer travel. Should you book now or should you wait a few weeks before you book it? And also, a movement in New York is going to make it illegal for you to have to check email or phone calls after hours. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time is 12:10 as we continue on the Noon Business Hour today.
The reboot of the sitcom Roseanne attracted a huge audience, including an unprecedented number of people who watched it later. We'll discuss time-shifting viewing in our next segment. But the first quarter of the year has just ended. Let's get a perspective on the economy from Anirvan Banerjee, co-founder and chief research officer at ECRI in New York. Anirvan, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. We always appreciate you being here. As we've seen, especially volatility, we can call it that, over the last few weeks, what are you expecting here in the near term on the markets?
Volatility is something that happens from time to time. But I think the question is this just a random event, or is there something going on with the economy? And I would submit that there's some evidence that this is kind of a Wile E. Coyote moment for the economy and perhaps the markets. So what's going on is that, as we all know, the economy accelerated nicely since 2016 into last year. But the consensus basically extrapolated that into, you know, continually improving growth through this year, much like Wile E. Coyote kind of extrapolates his path and goes flying off the edge of the cliff. And what we are doing now is there's this extrapolation within the consensus, okay, the economy is going to strengthen, accelerate, speed up from here. The reality that we are seeing here and into the future is the opposite. The economy is slowing down, and it's likely to ease further. And that's the disconnect. And if you have a Fed that is intent on hiking rates, you know, 3, 4, 5 times this year, that creates a bit of a disconnect.
Well, what would you advise if the president called you and said, Anirvan, we don't want a recession. We want good times for Americans. What would you advise?
Oh, we are not talking for recession just yet. I think good times are likely to continue in terms of a low unemployment rate and so on. But the idea that you're going to see, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%, 6% economic growth, as some people have forecast, that looks like a fantasy for the coming quarters. I think this is just the nature of the economic cycle. It is not something that is fundamentally wrong with the economy. The economy speeds up, it then slows down, and it does it again. Sometimes when it slows down, it does go into recession. So that is a risk. But all we are seeing here is a natural economic cycle slowing down. So it's not something that needs to be fixed per se, but people do need to realize that, you know, the trees don't go to the sky and you can't keep accelerating indefinitely. And that's the disconnect in the markets.
And
because if you look at the bond markets, I think they're beginning to realize that.
We're just thinking here today that we met you in the when the recession was occurring in the early 2000s, and you and your company called it then early, and it turned out to be true. What about the trade war? What is your feeling about this?
The trade war is unsettling because of the risk that it can spiral into a more serious confrontation. But I won't say that at this time it threatens a recession. What is the risk, if you want to push me there, is the following. Okay, we are slowing. It's just a fact. I can give you chapter and verse on what tells you that. But I'm just asserting it for a moment. If we keep slowing, as we believe we will, and the Fed keeps hiking, as we believe they will, the risk is to slow the economy even further until it gets into this recessionary window of vulnerability where a big shock can tip the economy into recession. And that's the risk. If, you know, the Fed keeps hiking rates regardless of the slowing in the economy, and then we get into this vulnerable position, and then we have a big flare-up in trade wars, that can be recessionary. But it's a series of ifs. This is not a scenario we're painting just yet. Right now, it's more bark than bite.
So when it comes to rate hikes, what would you like to see the Fed do? And I'm specifically asking that because if they decide to change course and maybe approve fewer hikes, could that send a negative signal that might have ripple effects?
Well, it could send a negative signal to the markets that, oh, maybe they're not doing as much as we thought they would. But that creates a more benign scenario for the markets, in fact, if interest rates are not going up as much as they thought they would. Already, Cleveland Fed, by the way, does something interesting. They look at the yield spread, you know, 10-year, 3-month spread, and they use it to try to predict where GDP growth will be over the next year. And right now, with the yield spread the flattest has been since 2007, the eve of the last recession, they're predicting 1.5% GDP growth. This is very different from the consensus forecast, as you know.
Anirvan, it's wonderful to speak with you again. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Anirvan Banerjee. Coming up, a record number of people who watched the premiere of the new version of Roseanne in the days after it first aired. We're going to talk about that.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The March 27th premiere of the ABC comedy Roseanne attracted around 25 million viewers, with about 6.5 million of those watching it on a time shift basis. Let's talk about the surprising success with Tom Lason, President, New Media Solutions and NewMediaSolutions.tv, based in Seattle. Tom, so for beginners, tell us what time shifting is. What exactly does that mean? And also, just how good is this premiere, not only the first episode, but also the second?
The premiere is awesome. 25 million viewers, and as you mentioned, that breaks out into different categories. About 18 million people watch live, which is a huge rating. And then the time shifting piece, it sounds complicated, but we've been doing it for 20 years. It's recording. So it may be now on your DVR or on a piece of technology that didn't exist, like your VCR. But basically what that is you're shifting your viewing to another time. Nielsen counts those plus 3 for a 3-day a three-day run of views on a recording device. That added to about 6 million folks, and another 4 million folks watched it in a rerun on Sunday. And then there's going to be over-the-top views as well with Hulu and other platforms. So 25 million, a big number. It was so big, as a matter of fact, believe it or not, ABC has already jumped in and said, hey, we're going to renew this for season two after the debut, the two-episode debut. They're already up for a renewal.
So it may be too early to start picking apart just exactly why it's having the success, whether it's old fans, new people coming to the show or whatever. But Hollywood has to be doing that to try to figure out if maybe there are other shows that they need to start doing.
Well, I think, you know, we're obviously in the era of hit reboots. You know, it's hard to believe for folks of a certain age that the 90s are now kind of considered nostalgic, but you're going to see a lot of these reboot shows coming up. We got Will and Grace coming, The X-Files, Magnum P.I. is going to be rebooted, Murphy Brown is going to be rebooted. You go to the movies, and a lot of those are parts 2, 3, 4, and 5, and reboots of other properties. So I don't think there's much of a surprise that reboots are successful, but I think you gesture at the right question, which is how many of these folks are that program's existing fan base, how loyal will they be, and how many actual new viewers are they gathering? And that's one of the big things that, you know, that's where the question mark is how sustainable is this ratings number? They pulled a 7.3 among 18 to 49 in that demographic group, which is seen as very good. But it'll be interesting to see if they can hang in there, if the show's going to have staying power.
How much of this is nostalgia, and how much of this, and is there part of it that is political?
It's no way to quantify that right now. There's no doubt nostalgia is a piece of it, and the political piece has got to be, you know, acknowledged as well. Exactly what those politics are, though, is the real question. Is this show a celebration of the working class, Trump-supporting family, and they are going to be able to take that football and run with politics, or is it really kind of an ironic twist on, gosh, look at what happens in class warfare, and look at the trials and tribulations this family is suffering, you know, as a result of policies that gesture at the Trump administration. Now, Sarah Gilbert, who plays Darlene, says this show is going to stop the politics after episodes 1 and 2. They've come to an end. But, you know, with Roseanne on Twitter, and you know, it's really hard to tell whether or not that's going to be the case or not. And I certainly think there is a risk. Folks are saturated on their social media with all things politics and social commentary. Do they want to turn on television and see more of that? I don't know. It's one of the big questions I have.
Talk about the something that really never before these other platforms like Hulu and such, it never really had the opportunity for the extra viewing. How important is that now to shows?
Well, it's getting more and more important, you know. It's not only is it important for hit shows. You really don't need, if you're pulling 25 million viewers in a 7.3 in a key demographic, you really don't need an over the top solution to get traction and to build an audience. But I think the real difference there is allowed shows that weren't necessarily hits in their debuts to be fleshed out, to build an audience, and to allow a creative platform for creatives who wouldn't necessarily get a chance to be on a hit show. So it is important for hit programs, but I look at that conversely a little bit. I think it's more important for programs that weren't necessarily going to be hits, and it's allowed us to really get some of the great programs that we see in that long tail of content that's being produced that wouldn't have necessarily been greenlighted by a network after its debut.
Tom, thanks so much for joining us. Tom Lason is president of New Media Solutions and NewMediaSolutions.tv in Seattle. And still ahead on this Travel Tuesday, the time is now to plan summer trips.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Another look at the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Leapfrog Technologies Group. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are headed higher with the Dow up 213 points, or almost 1%. NASDAQ gaining 33 now. That's a gain of 0.5%. And the S&P up 17. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by almost 1%. Oil is up almost 1% to $63.50. For a check of the grains markets, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have grains all up at the moment. We've had corn up close to 5 after being down a penny. Beans have been up 13 to 14 after being down a half cent. And wheat's been as high as 17 at the moment. December corn for 12 and a quarter up a penny. We have July beans up 8 and a quarter at 10.54 and a half. And we have July wheat up 13 at 476.5. Higher across the board. And this is Pete Mannard at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are higher today. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Travel Tuesday, finding the best airline deals for summer vacations.
The signature on a restaurant check may soon be a thing of the past.
A city councilman in New York wants to make it illegal for some employers to mandate that workers check texts and emails when they're off the clock.
President Trump is offering support to the head of the EPA, who's at the center of ethics questions and criticism for lowering car emission standards.
Wall Street right now, the Dow Industrials are up 140, the NASDAQ up 34, and the S&P 500 up 16.5.
Lots of clouds in Chicagoland, scattered rain showers throughout the day, a snow coming through this evening, maybe an inch before it's all over overnight. Right now, 39 O'Hare, 40 Midway, 37 along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Starting this month, MasterCard, Discover, American Express, and Visa will no longer require many businesses to get a signature from customers paying by credit card. Let's find out why from Matt Schultz, a senior industry analyst at creditcards.com in Austin, Texas. So thanks for joining us today, Matt. And so the question is, why?
Basically, a signature isn't a very good fraud prevention tool, and banks have realized that for a while now, that you simply can't match with a signature what you get from a PIN code or even a fingerprint or face ID.
But it's at the beginning, this will be optional, I would imagine.
Yeah, this isn't something that is a hard and fast rule. This is something that is now optional where you no longer have to get a signature.
But could that, I'm imagining a scenario where a waiter or waitress comes up with the check and wants the signature. Is a customer going to be able to say, no, thank you. I don't want to give you my signature.
That's a good question, actually. I know that it is definitely something that a lot of restaurants and a lot of merchants are still probably going to keep around, partially because consumers will want to keep it because it'll give them peace of mind, even if it's not the most perfect fraud prevention tool.
So how do we tip?
You should still tip the same way. Really, all it'll change is having to sign on that actual check. All the same fields will remain.
I'm now again thinking of these scenarios. So, if there's no signature there and you tip in the way that you both just discussed, it just seems like there's an opportunity for fraud there. In that, who knows who actually wrote that tip amount down?
Yeah, there does, but there's also the opportunity for, there's always the opportunity for fraud, and that's really the sad thing. And really, the truth is that signature probably wasn't preventing as much fraud as people think it is, and if it was, then banks would probably have kept it around.
Okay, Matt, thanks for the heads up. Matt Schultz is senior industry analyst at creditcards.com in Austin. WBBM News Time, 12:33.
Markets are moving up at this hour. We're now joined by Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management, also a Fox News business contributor in Orlando. Gary, the Dow is up 214 points today, so everything's turned around, right? No more worries. We're on the right track.
I have a simple motto with the markets right now. Don't blink. And, pray for what the next morning looks like, as we've been getting series of gaps to the upside and gaps to the downside that reverse at 11 o'clock and then reverse back at 2 o'clock. So a very tough market. But look, the big picture has been nothing but deterioration since January 29th top. And we're in an area right now around this 23,000, let's call it 300 area, maybe up to 400. That is some significant support that you got from back in February and really back in November. We had better not break that area, or then we're going to be talking about major indices going into the 15 to 20% range to the downside. So today, somewhat of an important day because you're holding for the second.
As you see some of these swings, are you seeing it sort of emotionally based trading, or are there some fundamentals people are paying attention to? Maybe it's good for some people to rebalance at least.
Unfortunately, when the market goes up big, it's always because it's the real thing. When the market goes down, they blame it on day traders and algorithms and all that. The fact is, it's the big money crowd selling after a strong 15 months. That's really all that's going on here. It may not be fundamentals. It could be Trump with Amazon or tariffs. It can be any number of things. For me, my biggest issue is just watching price. That'll figure things out eventually. Now, if the market starts to see a worsening economy or a recession, it'll act 3 to 6 months beforehand. I'm not so sure we're there. I think this is more to do with we had a big run, and good corrections do happen. This is supposed to be a normal course of business, and we hadn't seen one in a while. So for me, this is about as normal can be so far. I'll give you those two words.
If this was an opportunity to buy some stocks that are not as expensive as they were a few weeks ago, what would you recommend in general?
Well, I'm not so sure we're at opportunity levels yet, but I'm always a big believer in the greatest growth companies in the world. Names like Netflix and Adobe, Amazon, but they're going to have to get through a lot of this Trump stuff, so I wouldn't touch that at this juncture. Those are the areas I'd be looking at when I'm ready, and I can tell you flat out I'm not ready as far as investable. Maybe a little tradable here and there, but nothing investable, as I do not believe the coast is clear at this juncture.
400-point swings, you talked about it earlier. Is it necessarily a bad thing to kind of have the back and forth day to day and even in each session?
You know, it's not fun, let's put it that way. But I will give you a little trick of the trade. Typically, when you get wild swings, it's usually ending a move. So if it's to the downside, you usually get closer to turning to the upside. If you get wild swings after a big move up, usually you're topping out. So there's potential. We're seeing that here. And again, every one of your listeners should be watching that 23,400 level, a break below there. And I think it's going to invite more big money institutional mutual fund selling. And that's not going to be any fun.
Always good insight. Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management. His website is GaryK.com. Ahead, it's Travel Tuesday. We discover where the best airfare deals are for summer trips.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, and despite the weather, spring will eventually arrive and make its way to summer. That means now is the time to book trips, or is it? Let's get some help from Ann McDermott, editor at FareCompare.com, based in Los Angeles. Ann, it's always a question that people are wondering about. The best time to buy a trip, how far in advance do you wait for a sale, not knowing whether a sale is coming? Is there any way for us to really know how far in advance we should buy?
Yeah, there are a couple of good booking windows. If you're going to have your vacation domestically in the U.S., book between 3 months to 1 month before departure. If you're going to head to Europe this year, and I highly recommend it because there are some great bargains out there, you can shop 5 months to 1 month or 1.5 months before departure. In other words, you can start buying now.
Well, let's talk about some of the European deals. You mentioned there's some good ones for people thinking about going there this summer.
Well, for travel in July, and that's peak of the summer season, that's when the prices are most expensive. I have just found some deals to London from Chicago, $676 round trip prices. That's a one stop. Got a nonstop to Amsterdam, $689, Dublin, $716, Paris, $750, and the prices drop in August. So you can go to Copenhagen in August for $479 round trip. That's one stop in Lufthansa. London is $514, Dublin $530, Paris $590. I mean, the prices are really something.
What are some of the most popular trips these days where Americans want to go?
Well, I'll tell you, there are good values year-round for anyone, mostly in the U.S., who want to fly to Boston or Denver or southern Florida We're seeing deals to Fort Lauderdale for $126 nonstop. That's from Chicago, and that happens to be on JetBlue, but there are other airlines with very close prices. We're also seeing, you know, Denver for around $150, $160 round trip. So there are deals out there. There really are.
And overseas?
Yes. Definitely, this is the year where the big three have come down in price incredibly. And by the big three, I mean London, Paris, and to a lesser extent, Rome. But I've seen incredible deals to from various spots around the U.S. to Venice and Florence and Milan. It's what I suggest you do is you find a site that has a tool. Ours does, but there are others out there, where you can just, you know, check from one city, your own hometown, to within a month's span. So you can look for deals in July or deals in August. I will say this, if you have a little flexibility, if you can travel towards the end of August, you can really save some money, both domestically and for Europe.
Always good stuff. Anne McDermott, thank you for joining us. Anne is editor at faircompare.com, based in Los Angeles. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, avoiding work texts and emails when you're off the clock. It may become the law.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A New York City councilman wants to ban employers from requiring workers to check their texts and emails when they're off the job. Let's talk about it with Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. So this would mean, Rick, that if the boss calls at 8 p.m., he could be breaking the law.
Yeah, I really scratched my head at the intent behind this proposed bill. We are, as a country, probably more plugged in than most and really bow at the altar of productivity. This works exactly in opposition of what Amazon, Google, or most of the burgeoning industries would expect from their employees.
I'm thinking if you're in a union, there probably wouldn't be this problem because you've got rules that you agree to on the job.
Sure, absolutely. So organized labor has these rules. They have a bargaining agreement which they confirm, ratify with their employer. But those aren't really driven by a municipality. Those are driven by the specific company or that for which you work, and then your union, which represents you in that work. And you know, this is, I don't know that much about District 37, but this strikes me as more of a way to get votes. I believe the councilman has been in a tight race that he narrowly won. But if you've ever worked in a company of any size, this is completely the opposite of what you'd want to. You wouldn't want to bring your company into an environment where this was a law.
Has there been, I don't know if there's been any research on this or not, it seems like there's a lot of employees that actually prefer to have that device with them and respond to little emails here and there, even during the late evening hours, as a way of maybe making things a little easier the next day at the office by getting some things done.
Yeah, we have a lot of anxiety around not being part of it, and so the ability to work at home, which is a tremendous boon for a company and really for the right people, is actually an increase in productivity and a great lifestyle opportunity. But at the same time, not being able to do your work after five, if you have childcare issues and you now have, you're not allowed to, or going to get everybody in trouble or your peers in trouble because you talk to the boss at 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night when you had to pick up your children at school, or at 3 o'clock because you're a single parent. This does not line up really well with traditional, not even traditional, but modern working environments.
Seems like this might be a challenge, too, if you're in the exempt category when it comes to overtime, as to what an employer can expect from you during different hours.
Yeah, the real, I hate to be smug about this, but I mean the enforcement of this, the compliance. I mean, if this was to go through, which I would be surprised, it's fine for perhaps municipal government. It might be fine for the people who get jobs doing the compliance work and the verification. It's probably going to be fun for the lawyers who are going to defend or charge these issues. But if you're a business trying to operate in modern world, you know, you're a global business and your competitors, many of them are in the EU or in the Asian market, Yeah, we're not, by the time you, if you turn your phone off at 5, you're not even going to be available to half the world.
Rick, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see what happens with this. Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. A check of the markets from Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, the Dow is up 189 points or almost 1%. We're at 23,837. Just how bad were yesterday's losses? Well, the Dow is still down about 1.5% for the week. NASDAQ down 2.5% for the week, although higher by 27 points today. S&P is adding 14 points or a little more than 0.5%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg higher by almost 0.75%. Tech stocks and those affected by tariffs led yesterday's sell-off. They are part of today's partial recovery. Amazon, though, is struggling again today after another Twitter attack by the president. Amazon shares are just slightly higher. Automaker stocks, though, moving much higher. March was a good month at the showroom for Ford, GM, and Fiat Chrysler. All three car company sales were strong. In fact, General Motors sales up 16% and Fiat Chrysler's rose 14%. And finally, Spotify is making its Wall Street debut. It started trading earlier today at $165.90 a share, which means investors value the company at about $30 billion. With business at 25 and 55. Live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.